I was hoping they would do one, you know, in solid gold and charge like $150,000 for it.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Ray, and welcome to the RayWenderlich.com podcast. In this podcast, we'll keep you up to date with the latest app development tech talk. Now, here are your hosts, Mick and Jake.
Hey, Jake.
Hey, Mick.
How are you?
Good, good. How are you doing?
Yeah, not so bad, not so bad. Just about recovered from all the surprises and the announcements at the Apple event on Monday.
Yeah, it's a big week. It's like Christmas.
Yeah. So, like, I do want to spend the first 5 minutes this episode talking about that, at least, because obviously they announced more about the watch, which is what everybody expected. But then they kind of also announced a couple of other things, which I think took people by surprise. One of which was Research Kit, which I think is fantastic.
Yeah.
And the other is a new MacBook, which is smaller and lighter than the MacBook Air, but doesn't take the name, which is a little bit confusing, I think. So, you know, we'll kick off with the watch. What came out of that event new for the watch for you?
You know, I felt like I can't think of what was new. Does that make sense? Like, I'm sure there were some things, but I can't, like, nothing, like, hit me in the face. It seemed like we got what we were expecting to get. The pricing, I actually thought the pricing was going to be pretty close to where it ended up being. I'm still planning on getting the sport one. I'll probably get the bigger sport one when they come out. What about you? What was new? What didn't you expect that you got?
So I was off with my pricing because I really wanted to get just the Apple Watch, and with the conversion rate, the one that I wanted to get works out at just under £1,000. So I think, like you, I'll be getting the sport now, which is a bit of a shame. But also, maybe it's a good idea because if I'm going to spend that much money on a watch, maybe it's better to wait till like the second or third generation and see where they go with it.
No, I wouldn't even consider getting the more expensive one, considering that, you know, a year or 2 years, whenever, there's going to be another one that I'm going to want. So, like you say, maybe by the time they get to the third gen or something, then I'll start thinking about kind of getting a nicer one.
But I think also, I updated to 8.2 as soon as they announced it and went into the Apple Watch app that's now installed on everyone's system and had a play around, and that was quite nice. And also they updated the Apple Store app and they've got like a 3D interactive Apple Watch in the store that you can play around with.
Oh, I didn't see that. That's cool.
Yeah, and you can like interact with the clasp as the strap closes and stuff and have a look at all the different colors and preview everything. And it's even got some actual size bezels in there as well. So you can kind of hold it up to your wrist and see how it's going to look on your wrist, which is quite cool.
Yeah, that is cool.
But it was great to see that you could buy the strap separate, because I think what I'll end up doing is getting the all black sport version. But I want to get the blue strap because that's what we use in all the screenshots for WatchKit by tutorials.
Okay. So,
a little bit of sentimental value on that strap. But yeah, but I mean, I'm still incredibly excited. The only downside of all the watch stuff that they talked about on Monday was the dates of when it's going to be available.
Yeah.
Because I was hoping it was going to be a lot sooner than it is. So we can pre-order on the 10th of April, and then it's generally available on the 24th. So when Tim Cook said it's going to be available in April, you know, they've only just got in there, really, the final week. So that was, for me, the only downside.
Yeah. I'm really excited, too. I'm going to definitely get one day one if I can. So I'll probably pre-order as well.
I've just got to think of an app now to be working on in between to get it on the watch.
I
don't know if you've seen as well, but they're sending out a lot of invites to developers, inviting them to WatchKit Labs.
Oh, no,
which
I didn't
I've not
see
seen
that.
Before.
Interesting.
Yeah, so at first I thought it was select developers, and I know a couple of guys on the team who have big clients actually went before the event, but it seems to be that they're opening it up now to a lot wider area of developers, and they're doing some in America, and they're going to do some in Europe. So I'm hoping when they come to London that I will get an invite for that, and I'll go down and take a look. But I think one of the other reasons they're doing it is, I'm not sure if you've seen this, but they've updated the App Store review guidelines, and you can't actually submit a WatchKit extension if your screenshots are taken with the simulator. They have to be taken on a device.
Really?
Yeah. So if you want to get in there before the device is generally
for
available.
Like launch day.
Yeah, then you've got to go to one of these labs and Apple will take your screenshots for you on a device, as far as I understand.
Interesting. So, okay. I'd heard like something about that, but I didn't get the full story. I'd heard that not anybody was just going to be able to have a WatchKit extension on launch day. That's interesting. I don't like that, but I guess I'm okay with it. I guess I'll be okay with it. I mean, I don't have an idea, so I'm not, I don't have anything like I'm working on that I'm going to try and get in early on. So personally, whatever, but that's interesting. I don't like the idea that you have to be chosen, you know, to be able to be available on launch day.
I mean, the other thing that kind of made my ears prick up a little bit is the simulator must be, there must be some big differences between the simulator and the watch, because there isn't a similar rule for iOS. You know, it doesn't say your iOS screenshots have to be taken on a device.
Yeah.
Like, we can take them in the simulator and nobody's any the wiser.
Yeah.
So, you know, why can't we take them? You know, what is it about the watch simulator that means that we can't take screenshots? But obviously, until we go to one of these labs and ask those questions, we're not going to, or somebody else does and lets us know the answer, then we're not gonna find out.
You don't think it's like a quality control thing? I mean, obviously there's still gonna be a review, like an App Store review, but it's not like we don't want people who have never actually worn a physical Apple Watch or even seen their app running on a physical watch to go ahead and put something together where they don't actually, you know, have that tangible experience with it. I don't know. That doesn't seem right, but
it could be, because I know they're trying to control a lot more than what they have done with iOS. You know, this is obviously harps back to the very early years of iOS, where and they're clearly wanting to deliver a very specific experience, and that I think this is all part of trying to make sure that that's adhered to, if you like. But it's also curious that they have a separate app store, which is something they've not done before, because there's an app store, or, well, I don't know if it's a separate app store or it's just an app store that's going to promote apps that have WatchKit extensions. We'll obviously find out when the watch launch, because in the watch app at the minute it just says coming soon.
Yeah,
but I do find it curious that they've even if it's just promoting apps that are in the general app store that have these extensions, you know, it's something that we've not seen before.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. But just before we move on to our main topic, which, carrying on from the theme of the last episode, we're going to be talking about developing for Android with Daryl Bayliss, who is a researcher and associate tutor at Edge Hill University in Liverpool, as well as being a software developer at Urban Zoo Studios. I did want to get your thoughts quickly on ResearchKit, because this was the other big announcement I felt as of the event on Monday.
Yeah, so ResearchKit is very exciting, and yet I won't use it. I mean, I'm not a doctor and I'm not a medical researcher, so I don't know what I would ever do with it, but it does seem awesome. Like, it's very exciting. The whole idea of making it easy for researchers to collect data, like health data from individuals, that does seem like revolutionary. So, I mean, the idea of it is so exciting. So I'm pumped. I can't wait to see what happens with it. Like I say, I don't have an app in mind though.
But I mean, I just, what appealed to, well, there's several things. I think it's great that Apple are investing money and time in this area, because, you know, being one of the richest companies in the world and, you know, having all that money and having such dominations in the different markets that they're in, there are a lot of other things that they could spend that money and time investment in. But to choose to go down this path, I think, is fantastic.
Do you think that's on their mind? Do you think that they're saying to themselves, we are Apple, we are the biggest, richest company in the world, we need to do what good we can, like, considering that we're in that position? Do you think that's how they think about it?
I'd like to think that's how they think about it.
I mean, I hope it is. I'm just asking. Like, I had the same thought. Like, is Apple, I mean, even the car rumors that we've heard lately, I wonder the same thing about the car. Like, are they looking at themselves saying, you know, if anybody's going to revolutionize the way, you know, energy is used for transportation, you know, we're in a position to do that because we have all this money, so let's do something about this. I hope they don't go too far to the point where they are doing things that don't make them money, because I want them to stay in that position, right? You know what I mean? Like, I don't want them to bankrupt the company trying to save the world, but it would be great if they could save the world and make a bunch of money and then save the world in another way. You know what I mean? I think that's, I hope that is what they're thinking. I think it's awesome, but I just wonder if that's their, like, the way they see themselves, that's kind of in their mind. And it's just interesting.
I'd like to think it is, because I can't see them. Like, I already know that there's been push in like the medical sector and other enterprise sectors to get iPhones and iPads and that kind of stuff in those sectors. So I can't see by doing this, it's not a money spinner, because if they're already going to broken into one of those sectors, they probably have done it, several times over by now. So it does seem to be that they're doing it for the reasons we assume that they're doing it for. And that's why I think, it's great to be supporting a company that is willing to invest in that kind of thing. And I've already started to see a few things come up on Twitter about the amount of people that are already starting to sign up for the different research categories that they've already announced. I think they released six apps, so it was six different areas of research that they wanted to get involved in. And one of them was like, we've already had so many hours, we've had more people sign up to take part in this research than we had, than it would take like a year for a normal type of research to get. And that, that's the kind of impact that this is going to have. And that's why, it's really exciting.
Yeah.
But my watch has just buzzed, which means we really need to get Daryl into the conversation. But I do just want to ask you, like, a couple of sentences. All right. What are your thoughts on the new MacBook?
I think it looks great. I use a MacBook Pro as my main computer, so I plug it into a Thunderbolt display on my desk, and then I take it around. So I don't have an Air. I don't know that I would get one of these, just unless I were to basically replace my main setup with, say, an iMac, and then I probably would. Yeah, I like it. It doesn't irritate me. The whole port issue doesn't put me off that much. I mean, obviously the like cable thing is going to be a bit of an issue, but I think it looks like a great machine. I'd love to have one. So, but I don't need one. What about you?
I just love the fact that they've done it in the space gray.
That would
sell it to me, because then everything that I've got is in space gray.
I was hoping they would do one, in solid gold and charge like $150,000 for it.
See, I just keep getting the Austin Powers character.
Yeah.
I can't remember his name. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but every time somebody mentions the gold stuff, that's immediately what I think. They're like a guy in a gold tracksuit with all the gold hanging around his waist, carrying a gold MacBook under his arm. Like that it just brings that image to mind.
That image, yeah.
Obviously wearing the gold Apple Watch now as well. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we'll get Daryl into the conversation. Welcome, Daryl.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
No problem. It's our pleasure. Now, I've already kind of gone over what it is you do, and you kind of split your time between being a researcher and associate tutor, as well as being a software developer. But could you explain to our audience sort of how you ended up in those two roles, and then specifically how you ended up getting involved with Android development?
I originally got my degree from Edgehill University when the computing department there was rather small. It was kind of like a subset of business, which they thought, computing, business, for whatever reason, they kind of quite go together. But they're at the point now where the computing department has actually expanded into its own department. It's in its own building. Subsequently, they've got more students. They've also needed more staff. It just so happens that I was rather good friends with one of the professors there who knew I was involved in mobile tech. I was also involved in various other educational organisations in Liverpool. So they asked me to come back as an associate tutor to lecture about mobile devices, mobile technology, and to work on a few research projects with them.
Fantastic. And do you get to use, Android specifically as part of that research?
Not just Android. I also use iOS, a little bit of Windows Phone. So it's quite a mix.
Fantastic. To get straight into our discussion on Android development, I think a good place to start would be to discuss the major differences between iOS and Android development. So if you want to kick off there.
Sure. So one of the things that Android pretty much likes to cover is the amount of devices you've got to work with. We've got thousands of devices that run Android. Some of them with screens like the size of televisions. We've got screens as small as a watch, for instance, they say, like the iWatch. So we've got to try and cater for pretty much as many screens as possible. The way we do that is a little bit different than iOS. Like iOS uses auto layout at the moment, whereas Android likes to use something called density pixels and layout using XML. To me, it feels kind of building like a responsive website, because you're actually in auto layout, you've got the idea of storyboards, so you can actually drag and drop your various views into your storyboards, and then you assign the constraints. It's completely different in Android. You've got the option to use a visual layout. It's kind of akin to what XIB used to be like, where you used to work on your individual view controllers, but you've also got the option to actually hand code XML, which, in my personal opinion, I think you get that much more control over it.
Have you had any exposure to WatchKit, Daryl? Because the first thing that I felt when I picked up WatchKit and their new layout system in there is that it was very similar to the Android layout system.
Yeah, I've looked over the documentation, and one of the things that really stood out to me was the way the views on in WatchKit are laid out. Like I say, it is very similar to the Android way of thinking of laying up views, where you've got view groups, you've got various ways to lay out things. For instance, if you were to lay out various views in a horizontal kind of fashion, you'd use a linear layout, so it puts the views one after the other on the screen.
I'm an iOS user myself, but I have had a handful of Android devices over the years. And to me, just as a user, and again, this is just so limited my experience on the Android, it seems like the design, and like on iOS, we've got UIKit, and so most of the apps you use look very similar from a design point of view. But as a user on Android, that doesn't seem to be as true. Is my perception right, first of all, that the it's more open-ended on Android, and why is that, and what tools are available? Like, is there an equivalent to UIKit?
Yeah, that's a very good question, I think. In terms of like views and stuff, there is various things. You've got like your common views, such as a button, image buttons. You have a text view, an edit view, all subclassing from basically just like a basic view. It's just been customized for certain kinds of processes on Android. So obviously a button will act like a button. An image button will be a button that can contain an image. And text will obviously contain text.
So is my perception, would you agree that there's less of a standard, like that it's not as heavy handed in terms of making those things look consistent across apps on the Android side? Is that true? Or, I mean, again, my experience is limited.
I think in the years previously, there has been a bit like less of a design point of view in terms of Android. I mean, we have had like a concept such as the Holo theme, which allows you to pretty much skin your app to the way Google originally intended in 3.0. We've also got a bunch of standards now that just aren't for Android, but we also are available for desktop, even iOS, for instance, called Material Design, which Google are really big on at the moment.
I'd heard of that, the Material Design. Is that an attempt to kind of standardize design on Android?
Yeah, so it's just a way to try and make Android look a little bit more consistent throughout the various apps. It kind of works with the idea of when you look at various shades of paper, and if you were to layer paper across paper upon paper, you know, obviously you'd be able to see, you know, the various layers, different kind of flow, how one color blends into another. And like the community seems to have really taken that in its storm. There's quite a few tools at the moment on the internet that automatically generate XML, CSS, even SVG files. It's like really amazing what people came up in such a short amount of time.
It is a really nice design language, though, and I noticed that Google are actually shifting it onto all their suite of iOS apps as well, slowly, because Gmail still seems to be lagging behind, but yeah. I've just recently done the Google Calendar and the Docs, and they all seem to have adopted the Material Design, so that's pretty cool that they're dog fooding their own stuff.
Like I say, I've got an iPhone 4S that I like to play around with now and then, and like every time I'm plugged into Google, mostly because, like I say, I develop a lot for Android, and every time I open up another Google app, it's like, oh, you know, it's you've changed it around to Material Design, and they're just really, really big on pushing this to the masses now. And I think it's a great thing, just trying to give Android that uniform experience, not just on its latest devices, but also trying to support devices as old as Eclair or even like Honeycomb.
Can you highlight some of the advantages of developing for Android over developing for iOS?
Sure. So one of the biggest things about Android is it likes to, you know, one of the biggest shouting points about it is it's an actual open source project. So you even now you can go on the internet and pretty much download the repository that Android sits in and begin to see the inner workings of Android. Obviously, in comparison to other platforms, a lot of its source code is actually locked, closed away from developers and users. So you can, even though you're invoking methods or creating certain objects, you can't really see the inner workings of that. One of the things I think that is really nice when you're developing in Android Studio is when you begin to step into methods that have been created by the software engineers at Google, you actually step into them objects. So for instance, if you were to set an image using an image view object, you'd actually step into the code that a Google engineer has wrote, and you'll be able to see how, for instance, your code is interacting with that code and what the results actually, how it comes to that result.
Okay, so you don't disappear, or you don't get lost in a black box once you get beyond your code, as you would say in Xcode.
No, you don't. You actually step into the black box.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
The RayWenderlich.com podcast will be right back. But first, a message from our sponsor.
Are you interested in promoting your tool or service to top iOS developers? The RayWenderlich.com podcast is a great place to advertise. We have an audience of more than 4,000 top iOS developers per episode, who are all dedicated to mastering their craft. To find out more about advertising on this podcast, please visit raywenderlich.com/advertise. But I did want to just kind of pull you up on one of the things that you said there. Obviously, it is an advantage, and you've just highlighted why, or at least one reason why it's an advantage to open source your platform.
Yeah.
But isn't sort of one of the issues with Android, if you like, I don't want to sound too negative, that because it's open source, phone manufacturers have taken it and like changed it or layered their own UI layer on top of it, such as Samsung. I know they have their own, HT have their own. So as a Android developer, like, you not only have to worry about this huge fragmentation issue of you've got, you know, hundreds and hundreds of different devices with different screens, different processes, all that kind of stuff to worry about, which is one very different world to developing for iOS. But now you've also got several different flavors of Android, and it's not just several different flavors of Google's Android, but it's, you know, you've got Samsung's version, you've got HTC's version. I just wanted to get your thoughts on that, really, because I know sort of people in the audience or listening to this would probably be thinking that as well.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the problems I've came across in my time developing for Android. One particular problem I tend to have is when I'm actually working with the camera app or the camera APIs, for instance, because manufacturers like Samsung, Sony, those ones that make Android phones, they like to put in their own kind of tech that sometimes differentiates from the way Google suggests developers to access those certain APIs. But I know Google recently have been trying to really like stamp down on all this, these various ways that manufacturers are trying to implement really, really nice hardware, but trying to just deviate from the norm. So trying to like homogenize the way that's being implemented in this hardware. So it'll, regardless of what kit you're using, whether it's a Sony phone, whether it's a Nexus, whether it's a Samsung Galaxy, it all works with one code set.
Fantastic. Now, you mentioned a little bit earlier on Android Studio. And I've had some experience with Android Studio, but I also know that this is a recent addition, if you like, to the world of Android development, because for a long time it was kind of Eclipse and the ADK plugin and that, all that kind of, and it just getting started with Android tended to be a lot of effort. But Google took the code base from IntelliJ
Yep.
Which is done by the same guys that make AppCode. So anybody listening to this that still works with Objective-C will probably know of AppCode. So I wanted to get your thoughts on Android Studio and also how it compares to Xcode.
Like I say, originally what we used to use to develop Android apps was pretty much a plugin for Eclipse. Google did take Eclipse and add in their own flavour. We had something called ADT, which is the Android developer tool. It has all sorts of nice little additions. And once again, they've taken IntelliJ's Java IDE and pretty much bundles all the nice Android tools that I'm currently using at the moment. We've got nice features such as Gradle, for instance. Gradle is an absolute gem that we just didn't have in Eclipse. Essentially, what Gradle is, it's pretty much like a build system that we can use. So if we, for instance, wanted to start separating our app out into different builds, maybe we wanted to create a demo app or like an app that expires after a certain amount of days, we can start to refactor our code into separate pockets, so to say. Another thing it really does as well is quite similar to CocoaPods and iOS, is does dependency management for code locally on your computer. So for instance, say you had a repo that was available at some directory that was on your computer, it'll pull that in. But it also does remote repositories as well. So for instance, if there's something on the internet, most likely in JCenter, which is pretty much like a depository that Gradle accesses, it'll actually pull that code into your project so you can just use it as if it's there.
Fantastic. Now, one of the things I noticed about Android Studio when I first using it, and pretty much anything based on the IntelliJ platform, because I know they make several other products, it's all the same code base. You got kind of AppCode and PHP Storm and all the other ones, is it's really overwhelming when you first launch that interface because there is so much going on and it's incredibly noisy, you know, which is a completely different world to Xcode, which mm-hmm. has this really minimalistic feel and only really kind of gives you the stuff that Apple think you're going to need when developing apps. And it's kind of, there is more there, but you have to turn it on. But the guys at IntelliJ have decided to go with, we'll turn everything on by default, and if you don't need it, turn it off. So I actually found a really cool screencast online, and I'll put a link to this in the show notes, which basically goes through and shows you how you can strip that interface right back to make it a little bit less overwhelming. And I think that'll be cool for anybody looking to get into Android development. I'll get that post in the show notes.
Speaking of online resources, Daryl, you recently wrote a tutorial on Android development. Can you talk a little bit, tell the listeners what you put in that? What does that cover?
Android Development for Beginners, it's a three-part series that works with the latest version of Android Studio. What it does, it takes the user through the initial stages of Android development. It takes them through the basic concepts. So it talks about activities. So an activity for any iOS developers are not aware of them is essentially a like-for-like for view controllers. So it contains a window that contains all your views, it allows you to interact with your views, allows you to obviously handle all the UI aspects that you'd obviously handle in your view controller. It talks about intents. Intents are like really, really good, probably one of the most fundamental parts of Android. It allows you to do all sorts of really neat operations, not just from what they mostly use, which is transferring from one activity to another, but you can actually start invoking other apps to actually do work for you, kind of like extensions in iOS 8. That's really been something that Android have been really prepping for years, saying like, look, wow, this is brilliant. Look what we can do. We can, you know, we can call out to an app, the camera app, for instance, take a picture, drag the picture back into your app, and then you can do lots of manipulation with it. We also go over Gradle very briefly, how to set that up to inject certain parts, certain information, certain metadata into your project. We also go over actually pulling remote repositories into your app, so you can start using code that people have contributed or created themselves. And then we go over actually sharing the content with other apps as well, such as the messaging app. in a nutshell, it goes over pretty much the basics of Android and sets you off as a good foundation to go on and learn by yourself.
So you touched on intents there, Daryl, and that's going to be a foreign concept, I think, to most iOS developers, because we're used to things like MVC, model view controller, that kind of stuff, views. Yeah. But on Android, you've got things, you know, activities, intents, fragments. Can you just go over briefly some of the major players in Android development and what each of those things are?
Sure. So Android follows a really similar paradigm to iOS. You've still got your MVC. It's just implemented very, very differently. You mentioned fragments there. Fragments are Android's solution to dealing with tablets or large screen devices. So essentially what you do is, say for instance, if you detected that your app was running on a tablet, what you would do is actually you'd tell your activity to change in some way depending on the size. So what Android can do really, really good, for instance, a device is 720 pixels width, use this layout. If it's smaller, use this layout. It's quite similar to the way you stick two times or three times at the end of images, and then iOS just pulls out the right image, depends on what device it does. The way fragments fit in then is you actually fit your fragments into the activity. So you'd have one fragment on the left, for instance, of the device. You'd have a fragment on the right, and then your activity actually acts like a mediator between them two fragments, so they can begin communicating with each other. So you might have a list in one fragment, and then the detail would actually appear in the other fragment. I guess the closest thing you'd actually have to it in iOS is a split view controller, and then you'd actually have the child view controllers talking to each other through the split view controller.
So we're about out of time, Daryl, but I wanted to ask you one last thing. We talked a little bit at the top of the show about the Apple Watch. And so sure. What I know there's a bunch of Android Wear devices. Have you had a chance to play with them? And like, what's your opinion on that? Is it awesome?
Yeah, we've got, there's one or two we've got on a research project in Edge Hill. We've got a few of the Moto Android Wear devices, and they do look really, really nice. I've had a little look at the API the other week, and one of the things you can really do that really looks really nice is you actually make your own watch faces using a watch face API, which works similar to Android's live wallpaper API. You basically just make your own watch faces, customize them the way you want, publish them to the Play Store.
So are the Moto ones the ones with the round faces?
Yes, it is. That's
have you sort of noticed any sort of usability issues with having a OS that's typically designed for rectangle screens sort of put into a device with a round screen?
Not especially. I did some digging on this because like a lot of the, like you say, world watches coming out at the moment, even the Android Wear ones are square, but it looks like the Google engineers at the Android Wear team have actually been doing a lot of magic to make sure that your views on a circular screen, actually you don't get clipped by the edges of the screen. They actually they center stuff. They'll actually give you an alternative layout. So for instance, if you were to lay out your app using a square watch, when you went, again, if you can detect if it's on a circular screen, use this certain layout. Yeah, it's really, really, really clever stuff.
So the Apple Watch currently, the SDK as it stands now, it's kind of just a view layer for the extension that's coming from the app on the phone. Is the Android Wear a similar architecture, or is it more like, you know, code running on a completely separate Android device?
No, it's very, very similar. The actual code execution is done on your Android phone. It's kind of like your control center. It's just pushing data towards the watch. It's actually retrieving notifications from your phone, and it also syncs data. I'm not quite sure whether the iWatch does this, but pretty one nice feature I saw is even if your phone is the battery's run out or your phone's just out of range, if you had a reminder set up, for instance, or like even a calendar event, it'll still ping you to let you know, even though your phone's not available.
I'm not sure if the Apple Watch does that, to be honest, because I think they've still not given us enough information. And I think these are the kind of things that we're only going to find out once we've all got them and are wearing them and are using them regularly. But I think that's a great place to wrap things up, Daryl. So thanks again for joining us.
Sure, not a problem.
Now, I'm going to ask you all again to keep sending in your feedback. You're probably sick of me going on about this at the end of every episode, but next week's episode is our final episode of this season. And Ray, Jake and I will be getting together to discuss how this season has gone and our plans for the next season. So this is a really key opportunity for you to influence how we take the podcast forward. As usual, send your suggestions and general feedback to podcast@raywenderlich.com. And we've also really appreciate you leaving your reviews on iTunes. So keep doing that. We hope you've enjoyed this podcast. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you all again next time.
And that's a wrap. Thanks again, everybody, for listening to the raywenderlich.com podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. And don't forget to leave a rating on iTunes. See you next time.